Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, we'll talk with the organizers of the annual Yellow Springs Artist Studio Tour. That event continues today in Yellow Springs. And later in the program, Susan Hesselgesser, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters. Their 2011 Voters Guide will be available this week. We'll talk about that. And throughout today's program, we'll hear the wonderful sounds of 11th Hour, who gave us this.
WYSO Radio.
Fairmont High School's 11th Hour added beauty and energy to our fall membership drive, and we want to give you another taste of that on today's WYSO Weekend. Up first, Soshi Talks is a program from the Southern Ohio Council on Higher Education designed to enlighten the world with knowledge from primarily institutions of higher education in Southwest Ohio. Whether you're in school or have kids in college, I think you'll be interested in today's topic from Sue Palenka, a librarian at Wright State University, The Rise of Digital Textbooks.
Today I wanted to discuss with you digital textbooks and the costs of textbooks. So our current textbook system as it exists is basically broken. We have textbooks that are priced at about $200, and we have students that can't afford these textbooks. As a result, students try to borrow textbooks either from the library or from a friend, and many times when they borrow these, they can't get the current edition. It ends up being an older one, which isn't very helpful for the classroom. They try and purchase a used copy, or they go without the textbook. And neither of these options that students are using provide any revenue to the publishers, who have spent a lot of money investing in textbooks. So as a result, the price keeps going higher to compensate for fewer students purchasing the textbook. So what do we do about this horrible catch-22 that we're in? That's the question. And so in some way, shape, or form, digital textbooks could assist and make these prices a little lower, or perhaps take away the cost, and I'll explain some of that. First, I want to give a little bit of background information, just some statistics on textbooks. Tuition and textbooks are rising at twice the rate of inflation as general inflation. Students in two-year public colleges found that 72% of their expenses were on textbooks. And some are saying that 20% of students aren't even buying the textbook at all for their course. Studies are showing that finances are dictating the college and career choices of many students. And all of this just goes into one big mess, as far as I'm concerned, with textbooks. Some students are spending up to $900 a year on their textbooks. A gentleman here at Ohio State University Emeritus faculty who's with OhioLINK now, his name is Steve Acker, and I'll talk about him later in his project. But he says, the cost of higher education and textbooks continues to go up, and if we can't stop this escalating trend, we will price students out of higher education. So the question becomes, will students use a digital textbook if we offer it to them? And forecasts say yes, that digital textbooks will grow. In fact, they're estimating that by 2015, annual revenues from digital textbooks will be 25% of the textbook market. And they're saying that they will equal about $1.5 billion in sales revenue. But will the students use them? Some surveys say no, they won't. In fact, there's some research done from an organization called On Campus Research, and they have surveyed periodically over the last couple of years a number of college students. And what they're finding is 75% of the college students, this one was back from March of 2011, they said if the choice was entirely theirs, they'd select a print book. So we're not quite ready yet for students to move to this digital textbook. They're quite happy with the print because they know how to use it. You just open it up and read it, whereas some of the digital ones are much more complicated because they might have more than a textbook. They might have additional things in it. These surveys done by On Campus Research, it's part of a division of the National College Stores, so some people question the validity of the results because they are being conducted by college bookstores. And some are wondering, maybe they're drawing the wrong conclusion because they're framing the question in terms of, do you want a print or do you want a digital? And maybe that's not the best question to be asking. It's really about, can you afford it, whichever version it is, and what can you afford when you decide the price point you can afford, then which one would you pick? So there are many digital textbook options available right now, And most of these, basically what they have is the traditional print textbook in a digital format. So maybe it's a PDF, maybe it's an HTML, or maybe it's something that's formatted especially for a particular ebook reader like a Kindle or a Nook or something like that. But these are basically digital forms of the static print book. And there's a variety of them out there. And what makes these just slightly better is that you can rent them, and you can rent them for a shorter period of time. So you don't have to outright buy them. And generally when you rent, the prices are a little bit more economical for the student. But as you would expect, you don't get to keep the book. So if you're a student that wants to keep the book forever and be able to return to it, you wouldn't be able to do that. But what if we had a different solution? There is one out there. It's gaining popularity. It's called Open Educational Resources, or Open Access Textbooks. Basically what these are, books, documents, other educational materials, and they have three things in common. The first is they're protected by a different kind of copyright. It's called Creative Commons licensing. And this allows people to copy, share, and change the original content so long as the original author is attributed. The second thing they have in common is that they're developed by a community of authors or users, and they're intended for educational purposes. And then the third thing is they're free, which is probably the best thing about them. So they've been around for a number of years, and they started by individual faculty members who were just, you know, wanted something different. They wanted to try something new. So they started to create these textbooks or educational materials and offer them to their students. And as things grew, these aggregators came to be, aggregators like a company called Merlot, or there's one called Connections. And they started to bring together a variety of faculty chapter books, textbooks, modules on any subject and bring them together so that people could get access to these, change them, and reuse them. Some states, like in Florida, have created their own digital repository for these open educational resources. That one's called the Florida Orange Grove. And then there are some professional publishing operations that are being established as well, and one that's pretty common is called Flat World Knowledge. So open educational resources, we say that they offer the four R's of openness. The first is reuse, so you have the right to copy and use verbatim copies of the material. The second is redistribute, so you have the right to share copies with other people. The third is revise, so you can adapt and rework and improve the content to your own liking for your own classroom. And then the fourth one is remix, and you have the right to combine it into a new open educational resource that you can put out for anyone else to be able to use as well, or you keep it for yourself. There are a lot of websites, books, journals, articles, etc., about open educational resources. Some places that you might want to go for more information are the OER Consortium or the College Open Textbooks blog. They have a lot of interesting information. So what's Ohio doing with all this? Well, Ohio's doing a really good job with the open educational resources and with trying to bring the cost of digital textbooks under control. They launched a digital textbook project in 2009, one that experiments with the textbook publishers, with traditional textbook publishers, and with open educational resources. It's called the Ohio Digital Bookshelf, and their primary objective is to improve the return on investment in education by freezing the rate of the textbook prices. And they also want to increase and improve the learning outcomes of all the students that use these materials, which is great. So they have four main goals, and I'll come back to my friend Steve Acker, who's the research director of this Ohio Digital Bookshelf. Increase student learning, reduce the cost increases of textbooks, which are currently 8 to 13% per year, generate improved ROI, and what he calls escape the tragedy of the commons. And basically what he means by this is all these individual actors trying to improve their own self-interest to gain an end, but as a result, the community fails because everyone's gone off and done their own thing. There have been a number of webinars, a number of symposiums and meetings for this Ohio Digital Bookshelf. The webinars are available online to view, so you can find more information about this organization and what they are doing. And I want to give you an example from one of the webinars. There was a faculty member at Wright State University, and she was using a Flat World Knowledge book in one of her MBA courses. It was an IT type course. And when she did her class, her students had to take three quarters of this class out of the same textbook, and so she had a variety of students coming through. She used this open educational resource from Flat World Knowledge. She used it for 2 years, and what she found was students loved the pricing model. I mean, who doesn't love free? You can go to the website and view the textbook completely free. But students had the option of choosing to buy the book in print if they wanted, or as a PDF, or a downloadable format for their Kindle or their Nook. And each one of those was a different price point, but it was very small, like $20, $30, $40, very manageable. But the free copy was always there on the website. So she found the students loved it, and it increased the convenience of being able to read their textbook on their computer, wherever they happened to be. She had 281 students in her class for 1 year, and when she tallied it all up, what the cost of the textbook she would have used would have been, a savings of $42,000 from these students. So it's a great option if we can just get it all to work. And if there's faculty members out there watching, you're thinking, well, that's great, but how do I get royalties? You can get royalties from open educational resources. Just depends on which company you're working with. Another example from Ohio, this Ohio Digital Bookshelf is part of OhioLINK, which is the library consortia of academic libraries. There's 90 of us. And we just received a grant, $750,000 grant from the Next Generation Learning Challenges Group. And basically what this will do is allow us to create some online course materials to improve college readiness and completion by students who might be in those intermediate courses before they can be enrolled into college. And it's really good for low-income students. So they just received this grant. They're going to be developing a huge network of resources available for this group. So we're very active in Ohio. One other thing I want to mention is that librarians can be quite helpful with the digital textbook implementation just by getting the word out. We know where a lot of these resources are. We can explain to you what the Creative Commons licensing options are in case you're considering writing a textbook in that fashion. Additionally, libraries are excellent at working with publishers to come to an agreement on licensing, and we're able to host content because that's what we do already. So the problem is we don't have money to go out and buy all the books for the students. But if we can some way find a way that students still pay for the textbook, but it's a larger license that runs through the library, through the bookstore, through the just campus in general, but it decreases the cost for everyone involved, that would be a great solution. So this is just a slice of options available for digital textbooks. I believe they are on the rise, and we'll see a lot more of them. If you would like more information, you're welcome to visit my blog, which is called No Shelf Required. I've had this blog for 3 years, and it talks about ebooks and libraries, and a lot of it is now becoming more conversation on digital textbooks. And everything that I've mentioned in the session today is on a blog post, and you can contact me with any other questions you might have. Thank you.
Wright State University librarian Sue Palenka speaking on the rise of digital textbooks. This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO.
No good two timing lies coming out of your mouth. You play brought you down. Broke my heart, tore it apart. Look who's got the last laugh now. Don't you come crawling back, begging please on your knees, baby. If you listen to me, well, you can hear me on the radio. You wanna turn me on and on your stereo. Every you can sing about it. Playing our song, now you done me wrong, baby. Crank it up until you blow the tires out your Chevy truck. Chevy truck. Listen, roll me out, and when you're feeling kind of low, I'll tell you where to go. Turn on the radio.
On October 18th, the League of Women Voters Dayton chapter will issue their 2011 Voters Guide. This year, the guide will be free to anyone who picks up a copy of the Dayton City Paper. To talk about the new Voters Guide, I spoke with Susan Hesselgesser, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters.
The mission of the League for the past 91 years has been to educate the public on issues that are important to their community, their state, or their country. And we do this through public forums. We educate students in school. And we put out voters' guides and do studies and have community meetings on important issues. So it's primarily voter education. Someone asked me the other day, you know, can you sum up what you do? And I started to go into this long explanation. He said, essentially, you're the middleman between the voters and the government. And I thought, that's pretty good. So I like that.
You do have a new voters guide coming out. Let's talk about what are the typical challenges to putting this guide together.
Well, this year it was a little bit different. Enter Paul Noah and the Dayton City Paper. And the challenge was to get out there in the community, let people know, let the candidates know what was going on. And the results have been phenomenal. People have been so open and supportive and excited about the voters' guide. And we're just thrilled with the new relationship.
And how do you put that together? What kind of a team do you have assembled to gather all that information?
Yeah, we have a committee. It's a voters' guide committee, and we go to every single candidate. We start with the Board of Elections and find out who's running. We work primarily with just the contested races, and then we just contact the candidates through email or phone call or however we get them. We send them questions. They send the questions back. We give them guidelines. We don't change their spelling. We don't change their grammar. Whatever they send us is what we put in. Everybody gets the same amount of words so that it's a very level playing field for all candidates. It takes a lot of work. We put a lot of hours into it, but it turns out very well, and people love it and respect it.
Now, I know the League has taken a position on certain issues, but this is an unbiased guide for the voters.
Oh, absolutely. We do take positions on things. We say we're political but nonpartisan. And this is it's the issues, what they say, what a yes vote means, what a no vote means. Candidates are all treated, as I said, exactly the same. And it's just nonpartisan voter information, how to find out where you vote, how to register to vote, if you didn't register to vote, what you can do, just all the regular guidelines for voters.
What are some of the hot button or big ticket issues that are coming up for voters this time around?
Well, there are three issues on the ballot, and issue two gets the most. It's on Senate Bill 5, and that's what we get the most calls about. There are two other issues that are also issue one is the ages of judges. And that's people aren't paying any attention to that. It's a constitutional change to an amendment that was in 1874 or 1854, and just saying, you know, judges can be older and serve an elected office. So that's, you know, it's important for people to consider. And then the third one is health care, whether or not we think Ohio should opt out of the personal option of the health care bill by the Obama administration.
And what about ballot language for at least the three top state issues? Is there something that voters need to know?
Actually, it's pretty simple. I mean, sometimes it's a little bit tricky. But this year, it's primarily if you want the current legislation to stay, it's a yes. If you want it to change, it's a no. We will have it in the voter's guide. If you have any questions at all, call the League office, and we will talk you through it so that you understand what a yes vote means and what a no vote means. It's also in the voter's guide.
So the voter's guide is coming out in the Dayton City Paper on the 18th.
Yes, it'll be out in over 500 locations. And then the League has purchased an additional, and the numbers keep going up, we're probably going to do another 17 or 18,000 copies. And we'll be distributing those in libraries and community buildings. And we have a program called Subscribe to the Guide if folks want to call the League office, and we'll send you one. That'll cost you a little bit of postage to help us get it out to you. But we're just working really hard to get into the hands of as many voters as we can.
And you've got some forums or events coming up?
We do. Actually, we're going to bring the Voters Guide to life on October 19th, and we've invited candidates from Montgomery County to come. It'll be at Stivers High School. And all the candidates are coming. We're going to give out copies of the guide. It'll be a good opportunity for folks to interact with the candidates. And also, we're going to talk about the issues that are on the ballot, answer any questions people have, talk about the pros and cons. And just essentially what's inside those pages will come alive at Voters Guide Live on October 19th. We're also going to have a hotline because the Voters Guide will not be in everybody's hands this year. Starting October 17th up through Election Day, the voters can call the League office, and that number is 228-4041, and we're going to have extra people in the office to answer voter questions, so be sure to give the League office a call. And not just in Montgomery and Greene County. Usually our voters' guide has covered Butler, Miami, Warren, Clark, and Champaign. So because of that, we weren't able to do that this year. We will be able to answer some questions for those folks as well. So just give the League a call. We'll help you out.
Susan Hesselgesser, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters. You can get more information on that guide at lwvdayton.org.
I really need to know.
I really need to do things right.
It makes you shudder.
Chills start to give me, keep me freezing all night. Your name is stutter.
I can't believe it, I'm not myself.
Suddenly I'm thinking of no one else. Your name is stutter.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. And joining me in studio, Lisa Goldberg. She's the founder and organizer of the Yellow Springs Artist Studio Tour. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for having us.
Also with us, Alice Young Basora. She's one of the guest artists. Alice, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And Pam Geisel is a host artist and also co-organizer. Pam, welcome to the studios.
Thank you.
So let's talk about this year's event.
This year's event, again, has 8 host artists, and each host has either 2 or 3 guest artists. And we have more medias represented than we've ever had. We have a phenomenal glass person who does every kind of glass work conceivable. We have someone that does encaustic paintings. We have printmakers, which we've not had in the past. We have several jewelers, potters, of course, several fiber artists, a collage artist. It's a really exciting group of artists, and many, many, many of them are new to the tour, which keeps it fresh and keeps bringing people.
And are they well-established artists or some new to the art scene?
Actually, several are new to the art scene. Michelle Bondurant, for example, a painter who is incredibly talented, has only been painting for 2 years. And the response I've gotten already from people that have seen her images is incredible. She's fantastic. And we try to choose artists whose work is not typically seen often in the area so that it exposes the public to artists they wouldn't otherwise see. And that's true of many of our artists. We, in fact, have one artist coming from New York who this is her second year doing the tour.
We're speaking with Lisa Goldberg, founder and organizer of the Yellow Springs Artist Studio Tour.
And I'm also a host artist and a potter, and I have 3 guest artists at my studio.
Alice Young Basora is a guest artist. And Alice, let's talk about your involvement with the event.
This is my second year as a guest artist. And last year it was a lot of fun to really primarily when people come to the studio tour, I think they want to hear more about the process, about how you make the art or how you create the, in my case, it would be beads. And I have kind of a 3-dimensional canvas flowers that I paint and put together. And it sometimes requires a little bit of explanation as to what the material is and how it comes together. So I find that, in the studio tour versus just an art show, people really want to hear about how things are made and what you do to make what you make. And it's really interesting. After last year's studio tour, I had several people who actually I use like upcycled canvas for the flowers or paper to make paper beads. And I had somebody drop off a stack of really great magazines on my front porch, and somebody else who came in with a roll of canvas that was like a poster that they had. And I just thought it was really lovely to get to know people that way and get that kind of feedback.
So the event is actually great for networking, which is kind of a dry term, but the communication between people visiting this event and the artist is the key factor.
Yeah, I think it really it people have a curiosity, you know, and I think this, the dry network term that you used, is appropriate. I think that it really does let me network, because I'm relatively new to the area, and it's given me a chance to get to know other artists in the area, and I don't know, this is a great community for the arts, and I'm really feel lucky to be here and be a part of this tour.
Pam Geisel is host artist and co-organizer. Pam, how long have you been involved with the event?
This is my fourth year being involved with the event.
And did you come in as an artist or an organizer?
I came in as an artist, and then when the person who is doing the graphic design for the brochure and ads, and she left the tour, and Lisa called me, and she said, I can do everything, but I can't do that. I can do absolutely everything else. And I said, don't worry, Lisa, I can do that. So I designed the brochures and then also help her bounce off ideas. You know, should we try this? Hey, why don't we try that? Do you have any other thoughts about it?
And what is the medium that you work in?
I actually work in fiber, quilt-related especially, it's been a lot of fun because most of my quilts will have a story behind them, and so it's really nice to have a chance to share that story with the people who are considering buying it or who do buy it, because they like to know the story behind a piece of art when they take it home.
One of the benefits to the studio tour is that you really build ongoing relationships with your customers. And that's one of the things that I believe the customers really enjoy about it. They come year after year after year and begin to feel as if you are actually their friend, not just an artist who they happen to buy work from. They ask us about our homes. They ask us about our families. We really get to know each other. And I think people really enjoy then buying something from someone they know, as opposed to at an art fair where you don't have the opportunity to build that kind of a relationship. And a lot of the artists on the tour have gotten commissions and follow-up calls from visitors to the tour.
The tour actually started yesterday. Tell me what's taking place later today.
The tour runs until 6 p.m., and we really encourage people to come on out. You can pick up a copy of our map virtually all over downtown Yellow Springs. You can pick them up at Young's Jersey Dairy, The Winds, the Chamber of Commerce, any artist studio. You can go to our website, which is www.ysarts.org, and you can download a map from there.
Great. Lisa Goldberg, founder and organizer of the Yellow Springs Artist Studio Tour, also Alice Young Basura and Pam Geisel, guest artists for the event. Ladies, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. A special thank you to 11th Hour for providing today's music and adding some energy to our fall membership drive. And thanks to all of those who pledged their support to WYSO. We hit our goal of $200,000 last week, so thanks so much. You can still join us online at WYSO.org. Coming up next on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, The Book Nook. Let's finish out WYSO Weekend with more from Fairmont High School's 11th Hour.
Left you about a million messages. But don't worry, Daddy, I'm not vindictive yet. One too many tears tonight, and I miss you like you were mine. All your stormy words have barely broken, and you sound like thunder, though you've barely spoken. Oh, it looks like rain tonight, and thank God, 'cause a clear sky just wouldn't feel right. He's taken and leaving, but I keep believing that he's gonna come round soon.
Come round soon, I know.
You may be my final match, 'cause I chase everything that you play throw, and I play catch.
Never took much to keep me satisfied. But all the lies that you feed me, you miss me, you need me. This hungry heart will not subside. It's taking and leaving, but I keep believing that he's gonna come around soon. Until I see him again, I'm staying and leaving, but it won't be deceiving. He's gonna come around. Well, I may seem naive if I cry as you leave, like I'm just one more tortured heart. These cracks that I show as I'm watching you go are tearing me apart. I may seem naive if I cry as you leave, like I'm just one more tortured heart. These cracks that I show as I'm watching you go.
I can't believe that he's